Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Malarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the MLB Rebel Hockey Team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Stars training camp. Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. We've got a good show for everyone today. We've got Shane the Sheriff Knighty joining us to talk a little Golden Knights, a little Winnipeg Jets, how the players and generally the attitude around the league of Vegas joining the NHL. We've got Dana Lane wrapping up the UNLV season and some Golden Knights talk. Chris, good day to you, sir.
I'm doing well. This morning when I woke up, I heard the bluebird singing. I felt the sunshine outside. I felt a peaceness in the world today. I felt like, you know, maybe things are a lot better than we realize, and good things are ahead. And I slept last night with a big smile across my face. I can't pinpoint why I felt all this way over the last 12 hours or so, but it was a good Thursday night into Friday.
Well, if memory serves, didn't the Islanders play the Rangers last night?
Oh, that's right. Yes, they did, and they beat them 4-2. That's right. Oh. That's right. Yes, that was Anders Lee, who is not coming to Vegas, by the way, had another goal, and Andrew Ladd had two goals, including an empty netter. And John Tavares is a man on a mission, is all I have to say.
And you pulled within 1 point of a playoff spot successfully.
That's right. That is correct, sir.
At your lowest point, I think you had six other teams in front of you. So to come through in, I'm going to say, in a 10-game, 11-game span, and pass six other teams in the standings. Islanders rising, sir. Islanders rising. Let me ask you this. We'll break the ice with this right away. What does it say about Capuano that they let him go and they go on? I mean, what are they on now? An 8-1-1, 9-2-1 run
I think it's
back into
somewhere. I think underweight they're 9-3-2, somewhere around there.
So tell Vegas fans why they should be looking forward to Capuano coming as coach if that's the way that Mr. Foley and Mr. McPhee decide to go.
Yeah, to be fair, though, I mean, that's everyone's responsibility. I mean, I will get into this with Dana with Jack Capuano's trip to Vegas recently. But, almost everyone on the team wasn't playing well from top to bottom, from goal, defense. Forwards, and I guess one of the criticisms of Capuano people have said recently is in terms of dealing with young players, really young players, but there was enough talent on this team, and it's definitely deep enough that it's not fair to kind of throw all that on him. Not that they weren't playing hard, but they also had a lot of third period losses, games that could have went either way, confidence. So it was kind of a perfect storm. I mean, he has done some very good things for the Islanders. He was here 7 years, and he did get a rebuilding group. So, when you look at his resume, this season obviously wouldn't be one of the pluses, if you will, but he has done a lot of good things in his career.
Okay. One thing that came up, and I know we'll talk with Dana about this more in just a little bit, but the first choice for Mr. Lane, Claude Julien, jumps right across the border and goes Boston, Montreal. That's a pretty, I'll say, hardcore move, if you will, for Mr. Julien. He didn't waste any time, did he?
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that, simply because he'd been in Boston for so long. Obviously, he's been rumored to be let go going back to last year to throughout this season. You know, I think if he would take a page out of Gerard Gallant, I'm not saying he did anything, wrong, but he'd take a page out of Gerard Gallant, kind of, do a refresh in his mind, walk away from the game for a few months, the rest of the season. And obviously, there were going to be plenty of suitors and there's plenty of teams, looking for a head coach that we know of besides Las Vegas. And he was going to be very high on almost everyone's short list of candidates. So I was a little taken aback that he jumped right back into the frying pan, if you will. And, obviously going to Montreal, not an easy job, tough market. They're struggling a bit. I mean, I think he's a terrific coach. He's been the coach there before. So he had all that up. I was a little surprised by all those factors. But it was, a good pickup for Montreal, and we'll have to see how if they go on a bit of a spurt, because all of a sudden Ottawa's, I believe, only 4 points behind them.
Yeah, I remember we did our Winnipeg Jets show with Philip Ivor a while back, and it was at the Carey Price injury. And at the time, they were 8 points back, and I thought that would be a time for Ottawa to make a run towards the top of that division. And they've been holding steady with that lead, but down to 3 points, I guess they felt they had to make that change.
Yeah, I guess they did. Like I said, I was just surprised that Claude Julien and also the Boston granted permission was interesting. So I mean, obviously they're heated rivals and stuff. So this will be an interesting thing to watch the rest of the season, to say the least.
All right. So what else do we got on the ice this week?
Well, I thought maybe we each could give. We had our big NHL trade deadline preview show last week. If anyone missed it, please check it out. It's up on SoundCloud. You can go to the HockeyWriters.com podcast page. You can find it on BlogTalkRadio.com. Now that we 90-minute show, great job done by Zach Devine of the Hockey Writers, Hockey Prophets, Gobble Prospects, and Matt Carter of the Hockey Writers. Matt writes about the Stars and the Panthers. Zach writes about the Sharks and every prospect, the draft pick in between. Starting with you, in terms of one thought that from the talk that we all had, what jumped out at you from what to watch for the trade deadline?
I think that I think Zach made up a good point when he said that there's a lot of focus on this trade deadline and how the expansion draft looming will affect how the trade deadline goes. And his take on it was really unique, and I hadn't heard it, so that's what stood out to me, was that he kind of thinks that teams are just going to play it, most teams. If you're out of it and you do have a piece that you think you might lose and you want to get an asset for it, you might make a move along those lines, but you're going to be looking at that fifth defenseman or seventh, eighth forward that you bottom six, second, third pair guy that they might move for a pick. But teams that are in it or teams that are close to in it are going to play it pretty straight, and that you will probably have to wait and see for a lot of decisions to be made, considering how close the Eastern Conference is to the end of the season after the Stanley Cup and the window before the teams have to submit their protected list to the league. And I hadn't thought about that before, and since we talked with Zach and Matt, I've thought more and more, and I've looked at more and more rosters and gone through a couple more of my own mock drafts on planmyteam.com. And you know, when you look at the teams and where they are in the East and the West and who might be doing what, it might be a quieter deadline than a lot of people think. I'll throw it right back to you. What stood out to you?
Yeah, and our other guest, Matt, really good friend of the show, Matt Pryor, and talking about the Stars and just talking overall, and kind of piggybacking what you just said, you know, and looking at the league, you know, I don't know, as of now, there's not a lot of definite sellers, you know, and even then, you know, they're going to have limited parts to sell in terms of Detroit with Vanek, maybe a Brendan Smith. Arizona with Shane Doan and Martin Hansel. And we talked about Colorado. Jerome McGinn was a UFA, pending UFA, but they don't have to move Landeskog and Duchesne, and obviously that's a complicated trade. So it kind of goes back to our conversation with Matt of, you know, if you're a team looking to buy, you know, the team, and especially since the show, the Stars have lost a couple more games, only need to further out, that the Stars are the, you know, your, should be your number one call. I mean, with Patrick Eves, Patrick Sharp, and Johnny Oduya, all three pending UFAs, I think Jim Neal and the Stars, as Matt Pryor said, are going to be selling those pieces for the best deals that they can get. So, and that's going to focus on draft picks and high draft picks and prospects knocking on the NHL door. So, I think that the Stars will be the big seller, even though we think of the other teams lower in the standings.
Interesting, interesting. Well, we're getting closer and closer. I know our old friend Buffalo Tom sent me a text last night at the Sabres Av game. It's 28 general managers and or scouts were at that game. So a lot of attention on Sabres Avalanche towards this upcoming trade deadline, sir.
And I guess we'll just have to wait and see how all that plays out. So let's end the Break in the Ice segment and welcome in our first guest of the show.
We're joined today by a very special guest, longtime NHL D-man and current radio voice and television voice on TSN in Canada for the Winnipeg Jets, Shane Knighty. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. When we met on Twitter earlier, well, let me give a little background. There are a lot of new hockey fans in Las Vegas. So Shane played 10, 11 years in the NHL, notably with Ottawa, good stint in Ottawa with the Senators, Atlanta Thrashers, which oddly enough now with the Winnipeg Jets, you got to rejoin that franchise in your broadcasting capacity, and then played with the Bruins at the end of your career and was on the Cup team in 2010. And if what I read is correct, you did get a ring out of the deal, right?
I did. That's correct. That was the 2011 Cup, and you know, it's a good way to end the career to go through something like that. So, yeah, the years go by quick though as I stepped out of playing and got into doing TV, radio, mainly TV now, and it's been a good transition because you always want to stay in the game. It's something you've done your whole life, and I feel very lucky. And as you mentioned, very excited about the new team coming in next year. I think everybody is. I get a chance to see players, you know, they're running out of guys I played with, but still there's some around the league, and get a chance to talk to every team. Interesting interest they have about Vegas coming.
Well, that's it's kind of what we wanted to talk to you about today. When we did meet on Twitter earlier in the week, you're enthusiastically positive, which I guess I hear the other side of the coin being the Yankee, right? I hear the why don't they just name the team the Quebec Nordiques, because in 5 years they'll be playing there anyway, right? So I hear the other side of the coin, and when I hear a good Canadian son like yourself excited about the Vegas franchise, I always want to talk to him and get that kind of a vibe going. So when you first heard that Vegas might be in the running for the 31st NHL franchise in the league, what was your initial reaction?
You know what? Just because it's an entertainment city, and yes, I know there's other areas that are great. I know people that, you know, I have friends that had a place there, and it's a fantastic place to live. And you know, for me, I obviously, as most people, have been there many times, but not outside, really far off the strip. But just knowing that you bring that entertainment value and to that sitting, to be the first pro sports team to go to Vegas, I think is a big thing for hockey. And, you know, obviously that's been my life and the NHL to me, it's a fit. And when you got a passionate owner like you do and Foley that can come in and I think this can work. Yeah, there's going to be some hurdles. It'll be interesting when it gets open, but the interest is it's everywhere. Everywhere I go, people, and it's funny because you see on the road, you know, I cover the Winnipeg Jets, but we get Jets fans everywhere and they'll travel. And I think that's going to be the case with Vegas. What better place for people to travel to than Las Vegas to go watch hockey? So you're going to build your own base, but you're also going to have that of the other teams that come in. And there's a lot of interest to see how this is going to work and play out. But I think they got the right people in charge. And, you know, George McPhee's, you know, been a general manager. I'm a Manitoba kid. I know you got Kelly McCrimmon as the assistant GM
right there.
And I know him very well. I actually played his late brother who passed sadly in that tragic accident over in the KHL. The plane crash with my coach in Atlanta. So, connections there, but you've got really good people going in charge. And not only that, we're all talking about the expansion draft, but let's not forget free agency. And there is a draw there for players. It's very interesting because I talk to a lot of guys, and it's funny when you're on the Winnipeg side of things, you always think it's hard to draw people to Winnipeg weather and whatever. I think, and it plays a factor in decisions that hockey players have. Where they're going to live, what's going to be like. Obviously, you want to play for a winner, so you want to develop that. But also is what's the living situation? And, you know, and it's not just the bright lights and gambling there. There's areas around there that, you know, it's much like Scottsdale. And so I think there's going to be a draw there and an attraction to a lot of guys in free agency as well. So it'll be interesting to see how this works going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting that you use Scottsdale as an example because I've used that in the past before where if you do get away from the Strip, we're looking at the Valley with 2.2 million people here, 30th largest media market that, you know, in the North America, the largest media market that does not have a franchise of any major sport. So when you say it's good for the NHL, the excitement and you know the bona fides that the city itself is finally getting recognized as some place that isn't a 5 mile long piece of street, but there's actually, you know, families that live and work here that don't do anything with the casino sort of thing. We got some of the best golf courses in the world. So obviously the weather, except, you know, right now it's raining outside and it's about 50 degrees, but you know, the weather.
I'm in Montreal.
Oh, okay.
I don't complain.
Not at all. good luck in Montreal, by the way. That should be a good tilt.
Yeah.
But I think there is that attraction, and I think, you know, when we first started the show back in March 2015 when they just announced the ticket drive. You know, I got a lot of comparisons to, yeah, you guys sold 5,000 tickets in, you know, the first 2 days, but then it took you another month to get 3,000 more, and then a couple more months to get to 10,000, and Winnipeg sold out all their seats in 13 seconds, or, you know, however fast, and kudos to Winnipeg fans for stepping up like that. I know they're passionate hockey fans there, but the one difference I'll say in that is that they knew that they were going to get their Jets 2.0 in Winnipeg, and we were. I always use the analogy that if you were going to sell tickets to a winter concert series, and you were going to have 41 home dates a year, but and you had to pay the money up front for your tickets, but we couldn't tell you what bands were playing, and we really couldn't even tell you if we were going to put on a show. How many tickets do you think would get sold for that? So I think,
exactly.
You know, I think Mr. Foley proved his point by before the corporate sales got involved in it, he had to get to 11,000 seats. And he did get to 11,000, and then once the corporate blocks were taken away, he got up to 14,500 seats. So there is – and we do have a history of hockey here with the Las Vegas Thunder. You played for the Thunder?
No, I played for the Grand Rapids Griffins
back in
97, so I played in Vegas.
Well, I probably saw you play. You were firing pucks at either Pokey Redick or Clint Mlarchuk during that time frame.
Yeah, it was years ago, but yeah, I remember that was my very first time to Vegas. I think it was 21, 22 when I played in Grand Rapids, and yeah, I remember we actually stayed on the Strip, which was interesting. My first time there, it was a lot to take in, but we weren't there very long. So we were there and then played the game and on our way out. But yeah, I remember the Thunder, and I played with probably another one of the most popular ones. Well, he wasn't there long, but Radek Bonk in Ottawa for years.
Yep, absolutely. He was the 16-year-old wonder kid when the Thunder signed him. He was the youngest player to sign a North American pro hockey contract. So, what was if you can? I mean, I know you've been in a lot of rinks and a lot of towns across both North America, you know, U.S. and Canada. Do you remember any of the atmosphere around that? Because it was really an exciting rink to go watch a game in.
You know what? I don't. And you're right. I played the American Hockey League. I played in the East Coast Hockey League, the IHL, the East Coast Hockey League. I know it's not, you can't compare, but Baton Rouge, Louisiana, I played for the inaugural team they had there in the ECHL, and Pierre McGuire was the coach. And that's where I went right out of playing junior in Canada, was down there. I was only there a couple months, and then I joined Calgary's farm team. But it was interesting, their love for the game down there initially. It didn't last because, and that's where it gets interesting in Vegas. And you guys did have the Thunder. For me, I think hockey really has to grow. That's going to be part of the development there with the youth and around, is to educate people and to get them into the game. I think that's a big part to have this, you know, the NHL last, is to get those communities around and to try and grow hockey around there, which isn't a bad thing. You got three California teams now that seem to be amongst the top in the Pacific every year, and you go back to before when Gretzky went down there, and that's what it's about. It's about getting into that market and building the game, and that's why I think it makes it exciting for me. Is, you know, it's obviously my favorite sport, and the more we can grow it, the better.
Tim Ford, well, let me bring in Chris, my co-host. He writes for Eye on Isles. He's an Islanders guy out on Long Island. I know he's got a couple questions for you, Shane. Chris, hop in the box, sir.
Hey, Shane, great to speak with you. I got two questions for you on the Jets and one on the Avs, team in the division that
absolutely
a lot. In terms of the Jets, you know, to me, this is a team that got a lot of young talent, both on the main roster and in the prospect pipeline. What do you think they have to do to take that next step and, you know, become maybe not a force yet in the West, but a team to reckon with from where they are now?
I think they're very close, and I know you're going to go through an expansion. They didn't get an expansion team, but they got an Atlanta franchise that was fractured. So they got a lot of players, and basically if they drafted, they developed, you suffer some pain when you go through it, but you start to see, you know, their draft picks, Mark Scheifele, Jacob Trouba, Josh Morrissey, Adam Lowry, and then you got Nikolaj Ehlers, and of course Patrick Laine, you get a superstar or a budding superstar. That's how you grow a team, and it's not easy and it's not quick, so patience is the biggest thing. But I don't think they're far away. I really don't. You've got some real good veterans around them, and Brian Littles and Bufflin and Wheelers. The goaltending this year, they decided to go young there. Connor Hellebuck's playing net for them. So whether they decide to bring in a veteran presence next year to help out with that. But my expectations is to have them right about, you know, maybe fighting a little closer for playoffs, but they're not far off. Next year is when I really put it on this team, because they made playoffs 2 years ago. They lost four straight to Anaheim, and they played hard. So they need to bring that effort they had then. Now they've added skill, because that's what they couldn't match with Anaheim, was the overall skill. Well, they've been able to add that through draft. Now it's a matter of, you know, putting that all together, and it takes time. You've got, you know, an 18- and 20-year-old in Ehlers and Laine, and a 23-year-old in Scheifele that could be your number one line. They need time. You got to grow. You got to go through experience, and I think next year is going to be a big year for them, and that's when, and I know we got a lot of passionate fans in Winnipeg. They, you know, if you're not winning, they're not happy, and that's Canadian market. So they've got to turn, and next year I think is the year that they start to make those big strides forward.
You mentioned Jacob Trouba, and obviously, you know, the off season and not getting a contract signed going into the season, and, you know, finally signing that 2-year deal. People I've talked to out in Winnipeg seem to use the word, they'd be shocked at these moves at the deadline. which I would be as well. I'll get your take on that. But more importantly, do you see Trouba? I mean, to me, he's the kind of what he brings to the rink. It's not like they have in huge demand. I would think that that 22-year-old kid, defenseman, as you know, took a little bit more time. I mean, and I don't think Shovel Dayoff was in a rush. Is in a rush to trade him. He would be part of their long-term plans. How do you feel about that, given the contract and all the off-ice? Do you think that can still work?
Well, I do. They got the 2 years, and then they still have RFA rights on them for another two. So I think it's 4 years. You kind of still control rights. And there was a lot of questions him coming in, but the strides he made since he has come in this year, he has gone from, as you mentioned, defenseman. I played the position, takes a little longer to develop, but he's become a man. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's becoming a dominant defenseman, and he's a guy you don't let go. So they've got to figure something out. He's not going anywhere. I would not let him go anywhere. He really has taken his game to another level, and you have to wonder now what the thing was before. I don't know if we really did know where it was going to go to, but now the way we see him, he's taking off. Just the way he can skate, he can stride, all the other things, the elements of his game, and now he's adding offense. So him and Josh Morrissey, who's 21, really becoming, you know, the pair. They signed Bufflin to that big deal last year as the number one guy, but I think Jacob Trouba is emerging into that position, and it'll be interesting what Shovel Dayoff's able to get done with him.
Yeah, my last question for you before I give you back to Mark here is dealing with the Avalanche, and obviously they have by far the worst, lowest amount of points in the league. This is not a team, devoid of talent here. I just saw them this past week when they played the Islanders, and they competed for a while, and then the horse kind of got out of the barn. And that, more so on this trip, that has come into question, I think, a little bit as well. Do you see this team a bit, being that the Jets are in the same division with them? What's your take on them? And I'm not saying they need a full-blown retool, but they seem to need a reboot. How do you feel about if they can get the right packages, if you will, in rebooting, trading either or and both Deshane and Landeskog? I know there's been a lot of Deshane rumors up here with the Islanders.
Yeah,
for another Winnipeg boy, Travis Hamonic being involved in that deal.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. But yeah, you're talking about the Avalanche.
Yeah,
they've got some serious issues, and I think I saw a clip from their game the other night just trying to break it out, but confidence is a major factor in any team, and that's a huge factor in any individual player in any pro sport. You think a confident individual builds a confident team, which builds, success. So they've lost all that, and it's just become a disaster there, and it can go right back to, Patrick Waugh's departure, and then from there, and now you've got, but you look at the team up front, you got Deshane, you got McKinnon, you got Landeskog. You got some veterans defensively. They need to turn around. And I go back to the year they had success. Varlamov, their goalie, was absolutely phenomenal. He was the reason. And they played the same way, but they were able to get away with it more. I think there is a real retool there. When you have as down a season as they have, you have to assess absolutely the majority of your players. I think that Mikko Rantanen, a Finnish young kid, he's going to be good for them. I think him and McKinnon might be their only two untouchables here going forward. But they need to find some defense. And then if they make trades, and I hear the asking price for Matt Duchene is astronomical, which, I guess you can, because he's a good player, a very good player. Any team would be, happy to have him. But there's a chemistry. There's a lot of things that creep in when there's losing like that. So it's tough to keep the room together, to keep everything in the upswing, and that's when you find out character some players, and that's one way for Joe Sakic and his staff to go forward and decide how they're going to do this. But obviously they're going to get a high draft pick. They're going to start to have to build. It's going to be tough times in that building. A building I remember playing in with the Forsbergs and the Sakics, and
yeah,
it was full. Now it's there's no buzz at all in Colorado about the Avalanche.
Let's hope they
just a quick follow-up.
Go ahead, Chris.
Let me just do a quick follow-up, Mark.
Yep.
Based on what you just said, Shane, I would think a Travis Hamonic would go a long way.
Yep.
He's not a sexy player per se in terms of putting up points like Erik Karlsson, but He's such a solid young leader who plays both ends of the rink and plays the game the right way, and he does everything very well.
I'm a big Travis Hamonic fan, just not only because he's another Manitoba kid, but that gives him a few points with
right.
me. I like the way he plays the game. I think he's responsibly smart. You know, there was a lot of talk when first thought that trade would happen. Of course, everybody in Winnipeg, wanted him to come there. Talk of him going to Edmonton, and that was before they got Adam Larson. There's a lot of teams that are going to have interest in Hamonic. To me, it's the Islanders don't want to let him go. He's got a very good contract for the minutes he plays.
Yep.
He's locked in there. He would not be a guy I would want to get rid of unless the return was right, because especially in the cap market, you got to manage that, those good contracts. And that's, a guy like him here in Winnipeg. I know he's been hurt all year, and a big miss is Tyler Myers, 6'7" defenseman. But, he's got a big back-diving contract which works in their favor. When you can get a top-four guy that, you can keep under that $4 million, $5 million mark, that goes a long way for your team.
So we're talking with Shane Knighty on the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and I know you're short on time there, so I just one quick question. So you get to see Patrick Laine play, night in, night out. You guys are right there at the playoff bubble. I guess part A, is Winnipeg going to be looking to add a piece or two that might put them over the hump? And do you think we're going to see the white out and white back in the playoffs this year?
No, I don't think they're not going to add. If anything, they might try. This is a year of building and growth. If they make the playoffs, great. But I don't think this is the year you get rid of any assets that you have. And if anybody, it might be, a veteran player with an expiring contract that the Jets have that moves on. Or they just stand pat. They've been a very patient team, and it's not easy. This is year six in Winnipeg, but you have to have patience to have growth. And it'll be interesting. They've got a tough fight here to get into the playoff picture. And if they can, I don't see them making any moves. I mentioned Tyler Myers, getting him back healthy. He's only played 11 games this year. He had surgery, and if they could get him back, that would be good. Toby Enstrom, another big part of their lineup, has been out. He just had surgery. He's out for 3 weeks. So just getting back some of those pieces would be great additions for the Jets, and this will be a year of them just kind of waiting it out and continuing to grow, getting ready for next year.
That's a pretty good theme to leave that on, as Vegas is getting ready to step into the NHL. Patience, growth, and success, in that order. So, Shane, thank you so much for coming on today and talking a little bit of puck with us. We really appreciate it. And coming up next season, when you guys come into town, we're going to have you back on the show to do some Jets Knights talk, sir. We really appreciate it.
That would be fantastic, guys. Not a problem. Enjoyed it. And anytime.
All right. Have a great
Thanks,
afternoon.
Shane.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That was Shane Knighty on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. Chris, first blush on what we heard from Shane about the Vegas market and how the Canadians are starting to warm up, if you will, from what we may have heard early in the process.
I think it's good, and the fact that he's had some experience there. Also, I think he's a great person, being a Canadian kid playing for Canadian teams. But the same token, he's played in some cities, as he mentioned, playing in Baton Rouge. I saw that on his resume, and then going to places like Vegas and other places and seeing how hockey has grown. So I think more and more that's come up. So that was great to hear. And obviously, he had a terrific take on the Jets as well as the Avalanche, which he gets to see a lot. So I'm glad we were able to get that input for him as well. And I think they're kind of Winnipeg's the sleeping giant. I really do. I think 2 years from now, they're going to be, when you talk about the contenders in the West, I think Winnipeg's going to be one of them.
I think what we're seeing this year in the Pacific Division, about how the top teams maybe are a little bit past their best years, and the younger teams are trying to step up. Arizona obviously taking a step back this year, but I think that might be pretty close to where the Central is going to be headed in the next few years, where the Winnipeg, and I want to put Nashville in that category too. Minnesota's obviously taking a big step forward this year, but there's some age on that team too up in Minnesota. So I enjoyed watching Winnipeg make the playoffs again. I'm a fan of that, you know, the white out and white. I've probably said it 10 times already, but it bears mentioning that that's one of the best playoff atmospheres there is in the sport. So that was great. And if they don't make it this year, and maybe if they do free up a piece at the deadline, you know, create some cap space, get a little, you know, stable, and go forward with the youth movement there. Shane's going to be watching a lot of exciting hockey. So if you guys want to follow Shane, he does mostly television now on TSN Television for the Winnipeg Jets. You can follow him at Shane Knighty. That's SHANEHNIDY. Some of you guys might remember him back in the day, nicknamed Shane the Sheriff, patrolling the blue line around Ottawa, Atlanta, Boston, so on and so forth. And I'd like to talk to him for a little bit longer and talk about some of the Grand Rapids days and the Louisiana days. That was a pretty good conversation. But we're gonna take a real quick break. We'll come back with Data Lane and the Vegas Lane in just a short minute. So we'll be right back. So if you're in Las Vegas and you're looking for a martial arts studio for you, yourself, your family, your kids, you can't do any better than Victory Martial Arts at the Tenaya campus. Mr. Hopkins is a three-time instructor of the year with the ATA. His school last year won Victory Martial Arts School of the Year nationally. The director over at Summerlin is a four-time world champ sparring champion now. They have Krav Maga, Taekwondo, Showtime Pettis's MMA program for kids and adults, so where they mix jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, striking, the full complement of an MMA training program. And if you tell them you heard this here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast, they will give you your first lesson free. So give them a call, 702-803-3771. Tell Mr. Hopkins Mark sent you, and he'll take good care of you. And we're back from that little short break for Victory Martial Arts. We're going to bring in our next guest, weekly contributor to the show, Dana Lane. You guys can follow Dana on Twitter at Dana Lane NHL, or for his sports gaming expertise, you can – did I say expertise? I meant expertise. That's – I don't know what's going on. It's Dana Lane Sports on Twitter. And if I say this right, I get a bonus. SBR Sports?
Yeah, SBR Picks, which stands for Sportsbook Review. You can go on SBR.com, and we have a write-up every single day about the games that we like, and we're doing extremely well, so check that out.
Yes, sir, you guys are doing really well over there. So let me just get you to wrap up the, obviously, the most successful season in UNLV hockey history, regular season-wise. Put a bow tie on that and prep us up for the playoffs, sir.
Yeah, basically what's going to happen is, unfortunately, UNLV did not get the automatic berth to the national championships in Columbus, Ohio. But it could be a blessing in disguise, because we've seen what this team does after they've had a little bit of a break. They're better when they play consistently. So, next week, they will go up to Greeley, Colorado. They are the highest seed in that tournament, so that it tells you how close they were to getting the automatic berth. And they will, their first round opponent will be the winner, will most likely be Northridge, which they just got through beating 13-0 in two games combined. And then if the seeds hold up, they will play Denver University, which is a higher seed, but did defeat UNLV earlier in the year. Granted, it was a three-game and three-day situation, so,
right.
You don't know how much you could take from that. But they will be off next weekend to play in that, and there will be two teams from each region to go to Columbus, Ohio, and so all they have to do is win two games, and they're in Columbus. And I think that's easy. I don't want to say it's easy to do, But certainly when you're looking at the teams that potentially would have to play, certainly the first round looks like it should be a reflection of what they've already done. And the second round, you know, when you throw a little revenge in there, I think that's going to motivate UNLV to get to Columbus.
Now, I don't know if the NCAA has anything to do with this, but we all know how the NCAA feels about the Rebels. Okay, this is not breaking news here. Did anybody from the NCAA call the tournament seedings there and whisper in their ear about not giving us the bye? Because all year long, they're the first or second best team in all of club hockey. Do we got a little anti-Tark sentiment filtering down through the reins here?
No, unfortunately, the NCAA has nothing to do with this. It's all the ACHA. And look, you know, you try to be optimistic, but here's the thing. They were number two. They've been number two all year. They went and played Northern Arizona, who was number three just about all season. They lost two games to Northern Arizona, and that's basically what it is.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is, the bigger picture of this is, you know, the number one team, which is Williston College, which is a college in South Dakota, or in North Dakota, rather, got put in this region after the season had already started to create some competitive balance. And it's like they never should be in this region. UNLV and Northern Arizona should be the 1 and 2 seed and already on their way to Columbus. Next year when they go Division I club, they don't have to worry about this Mickey Mouse stuff. So
right.
That's the way it is, and it's fine anyway because they're going to win, and as long as you win, it doesn't really matter, you know, how you have to get there.
10-4. Well, we're looking forward to that. Let me bring in Chris to kick off the Golden Knights talk. This is a busy week, really, for the Golden Knights. I've been able to catch you and Brian's show a couple times driving home this week, and there's a lot going on. So let me let Chris jump in and kick off a little bit of Golden Knights talk.
Yeah, hey, Dana, great to talk to you again. Jack Capuano, yes, definitely. Jack Capuano was reported out here in New York News today, recently had a trip to Las Vegas. Obviously, George McPhee knows him well with his 2 years with the Islanders before becoming Vegas GM. What can you tell us about the trip in terms of, I don't know if you knew how long it was. I would imagine he not only with McPhee, but he spent some time with other people in the staff. I don't know if he got to meet Mr. Foley at all. You have any of those kind of details?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot of detail have come out about that. And one thing I do know about this organization, they're pretty tight-lipped about things. In fact, when Bill Foley was on our show last week, you know, it isn't the first time that he mentioned Robert Kraft as somebody that he looked up to in the Patriots organization. So we know exactly how they run things, that they, you know, run things by not telling anything to anyone.
Not the White House then.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, but I will say this, Chris, when asked about specific coaches, the only one that fully elaborated on, meaning he's a good guy, he's a family guy, we want somebody here that's a long term, the only coach he elaborated on was Capuano. In fact, he elaborated on Capuano and then basically said, and we feel that way about Gerard Gallant. we can't ask him directly about, you know, specific coaches, I guess, and it's, you know, for some reason it's kind of taboo, I guess, but we all wanted to ask him about Julian, and of course he wasn't going to comment about that, but he did say, you know, we're not in the market to pay $4.5 million for a coach. So again, that goes back to Capuano. And really, guys, here's the honest answer. McPhee is waiting to see what exactly is going to be on the table. And really, I think it comes down to Capuano and Lindy Ruff if you are talking about coaches that have the credentials that he said that he's looking for. And you're saying, well, Lindy Ruff, he still has a job. Well, that's true. Okay. But Lindy does not have a contract next year. He's a friend of Las Vegas. He's a friend of the program. I can see a guy like Lindy Ruff just saying, you know what, I think Las Vegas would be a great opportunity, and I cannot see him staying in Dallas. So if it comes down to Lindy Ruff and Capuano, I think it's Ruff, and I don't think if Ruff was involved, I think probably Capuano would probably be very close to signing now.
I have a question for both you guys, too, because I've been following when the analysts like Capuano go, and I thought to myself, this will be interesting. I'll really get a true test of how much McPhee is interested. Because obviously with McPhee, you know, who was very involved with the Islanders, he, in 2 years' time, he had a good rapport with Gart Snow. Everyone in the organization knows the organization really well. So I said to myself, well, if he brings him out, that's going to speak volumes. Because obviously he has seen Jack Capuano at work behind the scenes, the games themselves, so on and so forth. And he knows him frontwards, backwards, and sideways for the last 2 years. And I was reading that he felt that he was telling people he had a lot of respect for Capuano as a coach in terms of how he handles players and his dedication and how hardworking he is. And, you know, given the givens of what I just said and him going out there kind of reaffirmed all that, I'm with you. I think he's very high on that. On that short list, I think he's got at least a 50% chance. I'll throw it out there of being the first Vegas Golden Knights coach.
Well, and the other thing to that point, I mean, we have seen where McPhee is very comfortable bringing in people that, you know, have been an extension of his past, and so of course we know that that Capuano is an extension of his past, and. You know, to me, it makes sense. It goes along with what he has kind of created here. He has a slimmed down organization, but one that he trusts. And you know, to me, if I had to make a choice right now, Capuano to me would be the leader. But again, you know, when Julian became available. You really not look at a guy like this. I mean, if Therrien doesn't get fired and Julian is still out there, I mean, do you really not make a push to get Julian? I mean, there is a level of coaching that I think when you talk about Julian and probably to a lesser extent Lindy Ruff, I think that is a different level than when we talk about a Capuano or a Gallant.
Chris? Any follow up there?
I was just looking for your opinion, Mark.
You know, I agree with everything Dana just said. You gotta kick the tires, and it's going to come to a point of diminishing returns. I think that the longer you wait to see what's out there, the less that's going to be out there. You know, you could pretty much read the tea leaves and see what's going to be present at the end of the year, and I agree 100%. We talked a little bit about Dallas earlier in the show. And if they come into the trade deadline and they're sellers, then it's not going to be a coincidence that Lindy Ruff goes into the end of the season and that's the end of his tenure there. And I think that
I don't think they're waiting around for Paul Maurice.
No, exactly. So I think Dana's got it right on the head there, which that would be the
actually a question. Just
go ahead.
No, a question just popped up for both of you dealing with Lindy Ruff. You know, I'm not sure if it's, I mean, I remember him from his playing days, but I'm not exactly sure how old he is. I'm not saying he's an old coach or anything like that, but given his pedigree and given the amount of jobs that it seems like they're going to be open next year, do you think that he would want, even though he's a fan of Vegas, a friend of Vegas, do you think he would want to go to an expansion franchise versus, you know, going to, you know, more of an established team if he has that option?
I do.
Well, I guess he has got to weigh his options at this point now, too. I mean, right now, I don't know. If I'm the Panthers and I get into the playoffs, I mean, is Tom Rowe not going to stay? Is Doug Wade
Tom Rowe did say that, he's going to go back to being the GM next year that they're going to get. At least that's what they said initially.
I understand, but I mean, if this guy gets his team into the playoffs and they have a deep run, I mean, I don't know. You know, anything can happen. Even if it's available, say it's available. do you not choose Vegas over a Florida? I don't know. I think I might. And Lindy is just as old as Julian. In fact, we asked Eric Tosi, who came from the Boston Bruins, also the Golden Knights, and I said to him, I said, look, you know Claude Julien. I said, is that a possibility, a real possibility to think that a man of his stature would come to Las Vegas to take on a project, per se? A project with a good head start, but a project nonetheless. And he flat out said yes. So if Claude Julien would do that, I would think Lindy Ruff, who's right around the same age, believe it or not, would do the same thing as well. I don't think he would look twice, but I don't know what other options are out there. Because keep in mind, if there's jobs that are open, they're not open because the team's a good team. So I don't know. Do you come here with a great, you know, a more than a above average goaltender, probably above average defenseman, probably not a lot as far as scoring, but the pieces are certainly here. 2 or 3 years down the road, you could be competitive.
No, I hear you. I was just curious about that.
I'll tell you what I think. I think that I'll just put an analogy in something that already happened. Kelly McCrimmon, you know, was offered to, you know, jump the ship and join the Toronto Maple Leafs. Obviously one of the most storied franchise in NHL history, and declined it to stay with the junior team. And when the opportunity knocked on the door to come to Las Vegas, he accepted. So if you're going to give me an option, and this is no disrespect to the Florida Panthers or our good friend Matt Fryer, who joins the show frequently and covers the Panthers, but if you're going to give me the option to take a perennially struggling Florida Panthers squad, even though they have some great young talent, or to come and put my footprint on the 31st franchise in the National Hockey League, I got to believe the salesman that Mr. Foley is, he'd be able to talk him into coming to Vegas. That's my take on it.
I believe that too, and I don't know. You know, we'll see in October what we have, and actually we'll see after the expansion draft what they have, and you know, we'll have a better idea of whether or not, you know, if you were a coach, you would take advantage of that opportunity or go somewhere else. But my goodness, I mean, you got, you know, 14, at least 14. I mean, that number varies, but you got a great number of season tickets here, way more than they have down in Florida. Going to be an electric atmosphere. You're going to have a lot of pieces to work with. And by the way, Jaromir Jagr might be here. You know, there's a lot of people here. Darren Banks, who comes on Vegas Hockey Hotline quite a bit, former Boston Bruin and Las Vegas Thunder player. He swears up and down that Jaromir Jagr would be a good fit here. And he talks to Jagr quite a bit. And I think there has been some discussion about the potential of him coming here, which would be great.
Breaking news.
I think you're going to have some pieces here. And I also think, I know opinions vary on this, but I think you get the biggest name possible with the best resume, because I think that really shows people that you're serious about winning hockey games, and anybody that's a UFA or, you know, making a decision to come here or not. The better the people you have in the organization, the more that word expansion is diluted.
So I caught the tail end of the Foley interview, and I just caught a snippet of the fact that he said he's trying to get the payment together to make before the trade deadline and then become active at that point. Can you, you know, lengthen that conversation from the about the 30 seconds of it I heard
honestly, it's really not that big of a deal. I mean, it's really more of a big deal for all the other teams than it is Las Vegas. I know that they would love for him to make that payment before the trade deadline, and then, you know, he would officially be part of, you know, you can move some pieces at that point. But if I'm George McPhee, I mean, that's like, I don't need to be involved in a trade deadline. I got all the cards, and there's no reason why I should ever have to show any of my hand until the time has come. So I think it's more important that the other teams would rather they make the payment first, because they would like to wheel and deal with them a little bit. But as far as Vegas is concerned, they can just sit tight with what they have.
Yeah, and the closer they get to the amateur draft, the more teams are going to want to, you know, and the expansion draft. But I could see a scenario where they're calling to, we know we're going to have to leave this player exposed. If we give you a second for future considerations, and you not, our consideration being that you don't take player X, and we give you a second, and that could be a good way to build up your picks in the amateur draft, because we know George McPhee believes that building this franchise is going to come through the amateur draft and not necessarily through the expansion draft. That's the kind of moves that I would think they would be looking at, correct?
Absolutely. I've said it a million times. I mean, this is it's the only reason why I'm not completely sold on a Yager, because I think everybody you bring in here has to be a pawn for future moves, and I just don't think Yager is a pawn for a future move. I think this is probably his last stop. So you might want to bring him in to sell some jerseys, and I get that concept. But you know, certainly you want to make sure that you acquire as many draft picks as possible and build this team from the inside out. But Foley the other day said, you know, I've kind of evolved on that thinking. I mean, Bill has always been a guy that's wanted to kind of win now. And he said to us the other day, he said, look, I've kind of evolved on that fact, because let's be honest, guys. He sits there with George McPhee, and George probably says, look, Bill, here's the thing. We could probably win now and put a competitive product on the ice. The problem is you're going to have a big drop-off, and it's going to take you a long time to kind of get back to that point again. So do you want to build properly the first two or three years and continuously, you know, kind of mold this into something that's going to have some longevity to it, or do you want to just kind of go out for the sake of winning, and then, you know, your consistency is so sporadic that, you know, it really is not something that's going to appeal to, especially people in this town, that if you're not winning, they at least want to see effort. And certainly if you could go out and they can see your path or your vision for building this team, I think that's going to be a lot more acceptable than winning for first, you know, say 2 years and then having a 3 or 4 year drop off and not really having a plan. It kind of sounds like the Boston Bruins to me.
No, and we could go back to another expansion team. The Florida Panthers bulked up on veterans and spent a lot of money in free agency when they came in. They're in the Stanley Cup final in their second year, I believe, third year at the latest, and then took 20 years to get back to the playoffs. And that's not what Bill Foley's grand scheme is. And I think you're right. I think that we were talking with Shane Knighty just a few minutes ago, and we left the conversation with patience, growth, success. And I think that's the roadmap right there. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to add, guys, imagine if McPhee and the staff, between this year's draft and next, can add 6 to 8 draft picks. I mean, I don't think he's going to get first-rounders out of those kind of moves, depending upon who they are. You never know. But second, third, fourth-round picks, those are the lifeblood picks of any draft.
100%.
And all he would be giving up, is, okay, I won't take that player from you, I'll take this player from you. And so he literally would not be sending any talent in return. And, you know, if the Islanders want to worry about Ryan Pulock, he says, all right, I'll leave Ryan Pulock alone. I'll take Calvin DeHaan and a second-round pick as a future consideration. So imagine if he can do that, or even from a team, if the player is big enough, maybe he can get multiple picks from them from this year's draft and next year's draft. And you know, to me, right now, obviously the draft's 7 rounds each. So we know as of today, the Golden Knights for the next 2 years have 14 draft picks. I'm going to put if I was in George McPhee's war room, I got a funny feeling the number 25 would be written on the wall. That's how many draft picks he wants the first 2 years.
That's a good number.
Yeah, and believe me. I mean, believe me, too. A lot of people are going to, I would think, especially if you're picking low, they're going to try to unload their first rounders in this draft that really has very little to offer as far as impact players. You know, depending on who you talk with,
I'm sure there's some gems.
But it's got a lot of good players though in it, Dana, talking to Zach Devine, who we had on. It may not have the Jack Eichel, the Connor McDavid, the Patrick Laine, or Wester Matthews, but they, you know, it is still a very good class, and it does have a lot of good players. So of course it has good players.
Yeah. I'm just not sure. I don't think there's that untouched. This is not the untouchable class that, you know, certainly you wouldn't give away your first rounder for anything, especially if you're drafting high. I don't know. I mean, we've gone through this class, and I'm not sure we have guys that, you know, even there's been some talk about Patrick and, you know, whether or not he's what they portray him to be. But, I mean, I think the general consensus is this is certainly not even close to the class that they had last year.
Or the year before, which was fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I think they're more willing this year to give up, say, a second rounder, maybe even the low ones, just because of what is available, than they probably would have last season.
True.
Well, it's almost March. And, man, I could just feel it building and building and building. But let me let you get out of here, Dana. We'll do your Saturday night special. Focus on what games are you going to see this weekend? And give me a little bit of something to take to the window there.
Well, we're going to go to the Kings-Panthers game last night. And or tomorrow night, sorry. We're going to the Kings-Panthers tomorrow if we can canoe on over to Staples Center.
Right.
This is going to be a game that's going to be a back-to-back for Florida. So I do expect a pretty good effort out of Florida tonight against the Ducks. But even better, unless this number is too outrageous to play, even tomorrow, though, it's either going to be the over in this game. Because let's remember, back-to-back efforts, even if teams are a little bit slower or a little bit more tired, that leads to sloppiness, and sloppiness leads to goals. Too many people think that sloppiness leads to a lack of goals. So if the number's not good tomorrow, we'll probably look at the over in that game, also depending on the number, but it probably should be right in the wheelhouse. But certainly it would be Los Angeles if we can get a reasonable number.
And don't forget, I heard you guys talking about the trend of teams coming off of this, which hit me out of the blue, the bye week, if you will.
Happened last night again, too.
To the Kings, absolutely. The give up five goals to the Coyotes after their five-day bye, which, you know, just a weird concept to me when you're talking about, you know, we can't make the Olympics because we don't have enough time in the schedule, and you're throwing five days off in a row at teams. I'm sure you could compress all that into the same 15-day period and go to the Olympics. I guess the price has to be right at that point. But so the Kings did fall right into that trend last night, 5-3 losers to the Panthers, to the Coyotes. And I look for them to give a strong effort tomorrow night against the Panthers. So,
I'm holding you personally responsible for tomorrow night's game, Mark. I wanna win in regulation, not overtime. In regulation.
The last time you called me out on a game, I think the Kings came through for you. But then
a little bit. They won the game, but they won in overtime. So I don't want. You know, any points going to those Eastern Conference teams in the mix there with my boys out on Long Island. So
Islanders rising, sir. I don't think that one point's going to slow them down.
There's the one thing you guys can count on. Teams do not play well off of the bye. Teams do not play well when there's a major ceremony before games,
right,
as we saw with the Mike Ilitch the other night. There was even a short one for Patrick Marleau. Both teams went down. I mean, Brian and I kind of keep track of this a little bit, but it is incredible. And on the flip side of that, this dad's trip thing, I mean, these players go, you know, above and beyond when their dads are watching. So if you can get wind of when these teams' dad's trips are, I think the record's like 17-3 so far when the dads are in attendance. So a couple little trends to look at.
And, nice.
You know, a couple little fun things to look at.
No, I've always looked at the, you know, when it's, you know, pick your name when returning player X comes back to the team Y.
Oh, yeah, that's another one.
And they hand out a cup ring, or they do a little video presentation from the 10 years. Yeah, bet the other side. bet the other side. It's consistently
the
true.
The big returning player trend is absolutely correct. Yeah. Everybody gets on them, and it takes a while because people don't understand that that hockey is a game of cohesion. And when you are not at practice and you're just a little bit off, you know, throwing guys back on their lines again, it takes a game or two to get back. And you would not believe how many people just jump on, you know, team A because player A is back, and just either play the other side or wait a little bit for this team to come together, or, you know, for a line to come together the way that they're used to playing.
The other thing you could always look at, and I've played on this a few times, when a big player goes out of the lineup, the tendency is to try and play the other side. But a lot of times, the first game or two after the big player is out for injury, the rest of the club picks it up a little bit, and they'll come through and pay off on some plus money.
Absolutely.
So that's always a good hockey trend to watch for too.
Absolutely. I mean, people think, just because, you know, somebody's out of the lineup that, you know, the guy behind them is not. And at least when, you know, you're talking about, you know, a single game and what side to be on, you know, you have to factor in. First of all, you got to give coaches some credit. I mean, these guys factor this stuff in, and they coach their game accordingly. And then you get a motivated guy that's getting some more minutes. And people just thought, you know, it's just too easy to say, well, Malkin's out, I'm going to go against the Penguins, you know, especially now with, you know, they have some injury issues there, and, you know, people are you know, kind of shying away from them a little bit. I'm not shying away from them. They're still very playable as far as, you know, a side is concerned, and you're going to get a better number because the bookmakers think that they're not as strong as they once were. So I don't, even with backup goaltenders, I mean, we looked at Kemper last night, and people are like, wow, you know, Dubnyk's not playing. Got to go against Minnesota. No, it's, you know, a lot of this is about inspiration. Who's more inspired to play? And if you can identify the more inspired of the two teams or impact players, such as in a goaltending position, I mean, those are invaluable angles to get on when you're trying to decide what to put your money on.
And you can find out more of that information over at SBR Picks, and make sure you follow Dana Lane at Dana Lane Sports for all of his sports gaming acumen. Dana, we had a little bit extra time today. It was a pleasure talking to you, sir.
Always a pleasure talking with you as well. I am going to go ahead and drive into the eye of the storm.
Okay, good luck, and please be safe out there.
Be safe.
We're back to our regular time next Saturday, about 11:30 Pacific, so we'll look forward to talking to you then.
That'll be awesome. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for your time.
All right. excuse
Thanks,
me.
Dana.
Drive safe and have a great weekend.
Okay, guys. I'll see you next week.
Bye. All right. That was a nice little treat. We got a little extra 15-20 minutes with Mr. Lane there, sir.
That was great because we didn't have him last week, so it was great to hear Dana's take as always.
And the more I talk gaming with Dana, the smarter I feel, because I've left quite a few bucks at the old window, if you will. But the more insight I get from Dana on how to actually handle the gaming aspect of sport, the better off you are. So if anybody is heading to the window, you can't do better than going on at Dana Lane Sports and getting his insight and information. And along, you know, he sits next to Brian Blessing for 2 hours a day, who hosts, you know, part of the show is Sportsbook Radio. So you're not going to – and Vinny Magliulo, Sportsbook Director, is down there all the time. So you're not going to – you're not going to get cheated from some of the guys that are on the net that live in Nebraska, if you will, keeps touting their 114-5 record. Come to Vegas with that record, and I'll put you against Dana every day of the week, and I think I'm going to cash my tickets more often. So, sir, next week, break it down.
Next week, Saturday, February 25th, 11:30 a.m. Pacific, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. You know, use those times. We're bringing back a good friend of the show, Mark Scheig, who writes for the Hockey Writers on the Columbus Blue Jackets. We're going to go into the Blue Jackets, where they stand in the Metro, and as well get Mark's take, because at that point there'll be, I believe, 4 days or three and a half days left before the trade deadline, and get Mark's take on the trade deadline, what to look for as well. So good fan of the show. Mark did our mock draft show last year. Hopefully we can get him again for this year. We had him on early in the year as well. So he's a great guest, to say the least.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So after that, I know we got a few good things cooking, but I guess we'll keep them under wraps for a little bit. We've gone a little bit over, and I want to get – we're doing this the old-fashioned way, so I got to go into production and clean it all up and blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. So we go ahead and take this one down. Make sure you follow Shane Knighty. Special thanks for Winnipeg Jets TV for coming on, talking a little Vegas, talking a little pucks. You can catch him on TSN Television and on Twitter at Shane Knighty. That's H-N-I-D-Y for the sheriff. Obviously, I just gave Dana Lane's information. Check that out. Follow Chris at the NL King for all of his Islanders content and frequent links to our content here on the Vegas Hockey Podcast as well. For Chris, I'm Mark. We'll talk to you next week, and we're gone. We'll be right back.